Hello, this is Matt Broughton welcoming you to the Eat My Stack podcast. We have a different show for you today. There's no live report, but I will be bringing you a towel from Vegas, and we have an exclusive interview with Golden O'Riz herself, Lucy Rokash. But first, breaking news. Colleagues of former World Series of Poker champion say that Chris Moneymaker is less capable in his day-to-day activities than his own wristwatch. Greg Raymer has worked alongside Moneymaker for the past few years and said, "It's sad to see someone get outperformed by their own watch, but there's no denying that this watch has about three times as many features as Chris." The watch, a Santo Vector, was a Christmas gift from his parents and delivers flawless precision and style, standing in sharp contrast to Moneymaker, a man with neither a scratch-proof face nor an ability to withstand a depth of 100 feet underwater. Okay, it's time now to bring you part one of our exclusive interview with Golden O'Riz, or as we call it, When Jeff Met Lucy.
Your impression of them as opposed to what you used to playing with the regulars at all? I'm not good at it myself, to be honest, but they want to make, it's like they want to be making moves all the time.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, that's got to be a losing strategy. You can make a move now and then when you've selected your target and at the right moment when you've got the right energy. But if you think that you can plow your way through playing poker and then tournament by just making, I mean, that guy was making a move on me, he thought I'd got nothing.
Yeah.
Right? And he walked into a monster, you know. He's got 7 outs and he wants to shove all his money in and he needs a money shot. I mean, how stupid is that? But, you know, he got lucky. So,
that's the beauty of tournament planning, that does happen.
Yes, I want him to do that every single time. I want him to have the worst of the odds, to be shipping all his money in, right, in an even money situation. Because there's only me and him, he's not getting 2-1.
Yeah.
Right? He wants to put 4,000 in when there's 5, 1, what? How much is it in fact? About 1,100.
That stage of the tournament, because it's a deep stack, isn't it? I mean, you've got plenty of players.
So, they tend to play too fast, and I think it must be very widespread, because although I haven't been to the World Series now for about 3 years, how you can lose such a huge percentage of the players every single day when it's a 2-hour clock, and the blind, you know, I can't understand it myself. You can only lose a tournament of this if you cannot win it.
Yeah, that's what everyone's saying. Yeah, all the pros are saying that. But then the 500 that started yesterday,
yeah.
91 entries,
yeah.
And we've lost 20 of them within the first, before the first break.
Well, I don't know whether, you know, you play on the net, and because I've been so fast, like, you know, you come to a live tournament and they don't realise it's a totally different animal. And it is a different animal. I mean, I hardly ever play on the internet except for maybe a little sit and go for $3 and that's it. Because just, I can't win online. And I'm sure a lot of them do win online, and good luck to them. But they come to a live situation, and it's very hard to adjust. Very hard.
Two different categories of playing. There's two different ways of playing.
Well, I don't know what they're doing online to win. Believe you me, I've tried lots of ways. So whatever they're doing must be wrong, whatever I'm doing must be wrong online. I know I can win in live tournaments. Whether they can, they've got to be lucky. I can, if I get my share of luck, I'm going to win the tournament. If they get lucky, they may still not win the tournament.
Do you not feel also that because you're a named head, shall we say, people know you? I mean, how many women are there that are regularly on the circuit doing these bigger fights? There's you might see Chilli now and again, or Chilli was here for the 500. Shelley Rubenstein.
Oh, yeah. Is she here?
No, she's not. We're not seeing her this weekend. Who else is there?
Oh, yeah. Chilli?
Yeah, well, she was there. Chilli. She was there. There's another girl that she. Yeah, she was here, I think, earlier on. You don't see that many, but I mean, out of all the ones that everybody knows, you'll be one of them. You'll be in the top 2 or 3. You know,
I mean, to be honest, I don't understand this concept of a named head or a scout, because that to me is just complex. The idea of playing poker is to win money.
Yeah.
It's not to go away saying I knock somebody out, but then I lost my hand, all my money the next hand, playing like a twit, you know what I mean? If you hunt down or try and, you know, go for what you perceive to be big names, then you're only going to do your money. I mean, you've got the wrong attitude, right? If you're not there to beat this one person, you are there to make money. Right? If you clash with this person and you get lucky, or you outplay him and you for personal reasons, and I can't understand why they do that unless they're young and stupid.
Yeah, as you've been playing live so long, I mean, I'm not going to...
20 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be a few years now. Do you find out, has it changed that much?
Oh, absolutely.
You know it's changed a lot in that 20 years, but do you find it's changing now more rapidly in the last 2 or 3 years?
Well, I don't
due to the internet?
I don't think it can get much worse, the standard of play. By that I mean, now that people know about the internet and play on the internet, you've now got to a stage where they all want to chase you down with bottom pair or no pair, hoping to hit an overcard or just make a move on because they think they've got nothing. Now they all want to do that. I imagine the next stage must be to start tightening up again. Because when everybody's doing that, right, when everybody's doing the same, I mean, you know, you don't put your toe in unless you've got a hand because somebody's going to come over the top and now you want to be ready for them. So I'm at the stage where I will call huge for all my chips if I have to with very weak hands because if I have any doubt, that this person is putting a move on me, I'm going to call with very weak hands with all my chips if I have to. And I think that's the way because you just have to keep catching them bluffing. I mean, I was on a cruise in one tournament and I bet with the top pair, the guy thinks 5 minutes, he moves all in, big stack. And he's got bottom pair, well, I've called him like a shot, you know. I'm shocked. I'm thinking, what's the matter with these kids? You know, what is the matter? Is there nothing between the ears? Is it just like a reflex action? You can't have anything. I've seen you make a move once in a blue moon on TV a long time ago and you get it in their head. It's like if they're not making the move, you must be making the move. It's like they've forgotten that at the end of the day, it's got to be sound, solid poker. The best hand all the time. Have the odds going your way. Are you going to lose?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think the thing that we get from the good internet players is that they think that when they're coming to play live, there's a lot of fishy play. And we get it from the live players that play regular, that they think some of the internet guys are far too aggressive than the rest of them. But it's now getting to the point where there is a lot of respect between the two. There's good players and bad players in both fields, I think. I'm going on to what Barry Greenstein said at night during the WSO release. He said, like, the internet players are, you know, they shouldn't be here and all the rest of it, blah, blah, blah.
I think it's very hard for an internet player to come into a live situation and sit looking at you, and you're looking at him, knowing, and he knows what you're thinking, and you know that he wants to make a move on you, and he knows you know that. And when he looks in your eyes, and you look into his, and you're more or less telling him, you just try it, buddy. I'm in there, and my chips are going to be in there long before you. That can't happen on the internet, right? But so many times in life situations happen to me, like a young kid's got the button, he thinks it gives him an automatic right to raise. Well, you can do it once. It might get away with twice, but you're certainly not going to get away 3 times. I don't care what I've got. I'm shipping my chips in. Because I draw a line in the sand. Right? And I don't care what I've got. Right? But of course, so many of these internet players, they don't know that you're going to do that. They have no idea. So they just keep trying it on. And I saw a final of the EPT in London. And this German kid came on with huge chips. And there's a Lebanese fella, this is last year, who's got weakish chips. And all of a sudden, there's a run of cards, and now there's almost parity between the two. It's 5-6 players. The German kid, under the gun, makes a raise. Comes around to the other guy, who's just had a phenomenal run of cards, and he's really built his stack up. And he's a middle-aged man, looks solid, you know, I've never seen him for a all of it. Lebanese, thanks. Not committed, none of that, of course. German kid's got a pair of fours. Ace king at the other end. Now, okay, so the German kid's got his nose in the book. Why do you want to put all your stack in? And in that situation, he lost it, as it so happened. And then he lost, he gave the EPT. Well, no, he managed to claw his way back to come second, but the Lebanese won the EPT. And I'm thinking, that lays on the gun with a pair of fours, and somebody who's just hit a stream of cards, right, has just built up from low stack to nearly as much as me. He's not messing. He's got a hand. And if he's got aces, kings, I mean, why do you want to put your money in? The purple's just smaller. Pass. But of course, that's how he got there in the first place, isn't it? And making these moves, luck's been on his shoulder, and he managed to get into the final. And then he did his best to lose it. In fact, and yeah, he did lose the heads-up situation.
You play, obviously, you play at Stoke?
Sometimes, yes. I don't play that as much as I used to. I tend to just, I come here when they have their 3-2-1. I play at Broadway or at Warsaw when they have a festival. I'm trying not to travel too much because, quite frankly, it's too damn expensive.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on within an hour's drive from me.
What do you prefer? Do you prefer this side of anywhere it's dedicated to poker?
Absolutely. Oh, that is a fantastic place. Yeah, it's a fantastic place. Oh, casinos are too noisy. There's too much going on, you know, and some of you even have live entertainment when you're in the middle of a tournament and you're sitting next to the deal and you can't hear what they're saying because the loudspeakers are too loud. So I think this is fantastic place. Well run, parking's easy, structures are fantastic, you know.
Yeah, I think this is what we're all saying as well when we're playing more and more live now, and we love this. It's where all the online forums and that come to.
I think there's going to be a lot more of the online poker sites holding big tournaments. Look at the capacity that they've got. It's huge, and it's comfortable. The air's comfortable. The light's great. You know, you've got lots of tables, lots of waitresses. I mean, you know, you go to some places and you squeeze like fish in a can. You can't see a waitress for half an hour. You're gasping, but this is fantastic. Oh, I think I wish them all the best.
You're playing the, you're doing the GUP UK tour?
I've played one so far this year. If I do any good, I'm going to have a shot at one of the Bolton tournaments. If I'm playing well, I might play in it. I don't like to play in expensive tournaments unless I feel I'm playing well. Not only just playing well, playing well and hitting cards. Like, I was playing well today and got unlucky. Well, if you're playing well and getting unlucky, then you want to keep your buy-ins small. If you're playing well and hitting cards and going deep in the tournament, then that's when you want to up the stakes, because you're going to hit.
You go for anything in this WSOP down in Europe?
Only,
yeah,
if I win a satellite. There's absolutely no way on this planet I'm talking out
12K.
Actually, the Omaha is the one I like to play.
Is that your favourite? Is that your best game?
Well,
what's your
best game? It's one I enjoy playing the most, probably the Omaha.
To me, we're of a similar age, but I've not got half the experience that you, any of the experience you've got. I mean, I don't like Omaha at all. I hate the thing with the bench. But it seems to be that the older players, shall we say middle aged, no disrespect to you, like the Omaha rather than the No Limit.
No Limit Hold'em cash games are boring.
Yeah.
They are absolutely boring because most of the times you've got a couple of wines, okay, and I'm talking now about all size games. And it's even worse the bigger the game is. Because, like, if you go down to London and play in the 500 holding, No Limit holding, there's people sitting at 20, 30, 40,000 in front of them. But that money is not on offer. That money is not that's what I could blame with playing Omaha and the high-low games. And what's thought about the resurgence is all the centrists of internet players who only seem to know how to play an early holding. But I promise you, give it another 5 years, and when people realise that they're losing, they want to stop playing holding because it's so boring and it's structured in such a way to encourage people to just sit there and wait.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. Do you think, how do you feel about the horse events and things like that?
Well, I don't wait if it's the Cadillac of games or the two, if you can win a horse, you're the two champion product, because there isn't a pot limit event in it.
No.
There's, what is it, four limit events and then the final is a no limit? Well, most of your horses play limit poker. So how can you say it's the tournament when it's limit based until you get to a final? It should be pot limit, no limit, and limit across all the disciplines in equal measure.
Yeah.
Then you might say,
there isn't that much of a difference between any. There is a difference in some respects, isn't it? But of course, I'm saying that wrong. But it's going to be very hard. I don't think there's ever going to be. There's going to be the number one kiddie again, is there? Like, nowadays. There's always going to be arguments, are we better than him? And the rest of it. He's better than her.
Listen.
It's on the day.
No. At the end of the day, if you are a consistent player, consistent winner over years, you are good.
Yeah.
You are very good. You are excellent. You can win three tournaments in a row and never be seen again. Right, because Lady Luck was sitting there and you just hit form, you know, that happens, right? And of course, if one of those happens to be the World Series, well, you're made for life anyway. Nobody needs to hear from you again. But that doesn't mean that you're the best player. People like TJ Cloutier in tournaments, Brunson, played at the highest level, won at cash games and tournaments, right? Both. Lots of different games. I mean, that to me, they're good. They're very good.
So you don't like the Jamie Gold of this world?
Have you heard of him since?
How do you feel about the British guys that come through? Like, we had John Tatler come through last year, and heard a few this year. They've been there and there about.
Well, all I can say to anybody who's got is good luck to them. I think that. With the field so big, it's hard to win any of those tournaments. And from what I've seen, a lot of the time, it's just going to be luck on the day. Because so many of them are no limit, and it's just too damn easy to push your chips in and get lucky. You know, you make a move on somebody with seven. You can't make a move at pot limit 7-2 when the blinds are small, because you raise, you'll re-raise. If you re-raise again, you can still. You know, then you start thinking maybe my 7-2 isn't going to work anymore. But there's no limit. You've committed, but you know, chips have moved over the line. And you can, you know, all these names, and you've got some fantastic players in Europe, and some fantastic players in England, find it pretty damn hard to consistently get to a final table or win a place at the World Series at any major event, because the fields are so big, and the no limit structure allows people to just go all in and get lucky. I think what should happen is everybody should be playing a lot more pot limit tournaments. It becomes more or less like no limit towards the end anyway, but on the way up, you can survive the bad beats that you wouldn't survive if it was a no limit.
There'd be more play.
There's more play. I think that's very difficult to master, because limit players don't know what they're doing, and no limit players can't adjust to it. So I think we should be having a lot more big pot limit tournaments.
Yeah.
afternoon I came and played in it. But they weren't getting many numbers, 20 to 30 odd numbers of players. I thought, well, I didn't expect there'd be many more tomorrow night.
I know a guy that might play it now that I know you're playing it. I'll tell him, he'll play it.
He's not one of these scalp hunters, is he?
No, he's a young kid of 19. John Spinks is up there somewhere playing catch up. He's good there.
Right.
Yeah, he's on the far side of you at Aspen.
Unless he's the guy next. Is he the one who had the chuck twos? Oh, yeah, I'd like to smack him about. Come on, baby.
Bring him on. I'll tell him you're after it. I'll believe him.
I don't know if he'd called if I bet the flop with my nine. Maybe he does, maybe he does. If he does, it's still going to be the same result, you know.
Nah. Good job you're not a dolly bird. I mean, sorry, darling.
I'm old enough to be his grandmother.
Well, yeah, probably you are, actually.
Yeah.
Do you have a fixed strategy when you're playing these deep stack events, or do you just play as it comes?
You don't need to get busy, okay? Having said that, I like to get busy now and then. I sort of like to mix it up a bit so I can get very busy and then sit back or continue getting busy if I'm hitting everything and walking over the table. The point is, it's not very critical to get a few extra chips at the beginning because it will steal the blinds because it's so small in relation to your stack. It's much more important to survive it, to be honest. But having said that, you know, sometimes the cards don't allow you.
There's a lot of, like, I suppose, you'll know a lot of people here, I suppose. They're on the circuit, a lot of them, aren't they?
I recognise some faces.
Yeah.
To be quite honest, I don't know a lot.
No?
Because I'm not playing as much as I used to. And some of these people have come. I mean, there's a guy from Norway sitting next to me on my table. Yeah, he's come from Norway. He thinks it's a fantastic place. Because, of course, in Norway, he didn't come with the... he couldn't make it. So he's used this opportunity to come. He thinks it's a fantastic place. I recognise some faces, and obviously I know some. I know Julian here, and I know a few of the others.
Mickey.
I know Mickey. But, you know, the guy who knocked me out knew my name. The guy who...
There isn't many grey-haired grannies that I know that's probably played like
you. Yeah, but you know, the point I'm making is this. If you don't play every big tournament, or have your name up in lights on the TV, or on the front cover of this, right, they don't necessarily have to know me.
Yeah, but you're doing it because you win. But you have to know the cash.
Oh, yeah, that's not it.
Well,
yeah, but you've got to be aware that people are winning, you know. I mean, I'm not aware who's winning. I mean, he could be the world champion for all I know. The guy who's just walked past me. I don't know. To be quite honest, I'm not interested in anybody else's results. Except for mine.
Yeah.
I don't care who's winning what or how much. I only care about I'm playing and if I'm playing well. That's the most important thing. And the West can take care of itself.
We'll bring you part two of that interview a bit later in the show, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Some poor dude just had his aces cracked by 5-6 off. Now he is smashing up his laptop. Maybe he should have signed up to eatmystack.co.uk and posted in the BBV section. Visit eatmystack.co.uk to ease the pain. Baz finished third in PokerStars World Championship of Online Poker Event 1 and won over $87,000, of which over $50,000 was paid out to his backers. He won Full Tilt Online Poker Series Event 4 for over $48,000, returning over $20,000 to his backers. Are you a winning player and looking for backers to help you move up to the next level? Or perhaps you simply want to buy a piece of the action? Stakershark.com, the UK's top poker staking community.
Hi guys, this is Matt Broughton for the Eat My Stack podcast. Ramchip asked me if I would talk to you for a little while. Hi. I thought I would use this time to tell you about the trip I just came back from the World Series in Vegas, obviously, because I kind of have a tendency to make my life more complicated than it needs to be. And though I finally decided I was going to go out, despite a distinct lack of work, to actually justify the time and expense, I then went about making my life as difficult as possible. First up, I invited a friend along, which in itself wasn't a massive problem. But I also then decided to up the ante somewhat by organising to have eye laser surgery during that trip. And that is voluntarily paying American doctors to slice open my eyes, fire lasers into them, and then send me off half-blind into Sin City as a tour guide. It sounds like a shit comedy screenplay, but that was the truth of it. We started the trip about as badly as you could imagine. We had 7 separate incidents on the M25 to Gatwick, and this drives me crazy. That is 7 sets of dickheads who have somehow mastered the art of changing radio stations or adjusting their seats or applying lipstick on the move, but still can't seem to stop smashing into the back of each other's cars. Now, I've never managed to be so fucking stupid that I can't stop my car before it enters the same physical space as another car, so I don't entirely understand this problem. I have taken, however, to dealing with this constant frustration by winding down my window as I pass by the relevant drivers and shouting "Cox" at them as they sit scratching their fat, empty heads on the central reservation, watching a grown-up from the RAC collect up bits of Mondeo. This delay also meant that the guy that was going to meet and greet me at the terminal to take my car away had also now buggered off for a brew, so I had to call him back. But meanwhile, a uniformed Jobsworth traffic Nazi is insisting that I can't wait at the terminal. So I now have to pretend to have a leg problem and shuffle back and forth with single items of baggage like an old woman, killing time until the chauffeur turns up. Thankfully, halfway through my award-winning performance, think Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump, and you're pretty much there, the driver turned up. So at this point, I grab my bag, shout, "It's a miracle," and sprint up the ramp to the check-in. However, because we're now so late, me and my friend discover we can't sit together. So what was to be an incredible plane-based poker and beer festival now looks more like it'll be 11 hours watching the royal family round and round, and episodes of The Simpsons so old that Homer hasn't even got his own voice right. But as I plod through the gate, the woman takes my boarding pass, but says, "Come back, please, sir." And I think, fabulous, what now? Has my friend hilariously stashed 20 kilos of cocaine in my backpack for a laugh? And I'm about to meet a massive customs official called Bubba, who likes to make finger puppets out of sphincters. But no, instead of that, the lovely gate lady says, "You've been upgraded." And I'm thinking, hello, bingo. And then I catch my friend's face thinking, ah, it's only me, isn't it, that has got the upgrade. And he still has to face 11 hours stuck between a man with obviously no love of deodorant and a woman more interested in piercing every square inch of her face than brushing her teeth. I pat him on the back, going, well, it's a good job we weren't sitting together and I got an upgrade, because that would have been a real tough decision for me. Needless to say, bollocks would it have been tough. I would have been off up those stairs before you could cough the words "complimentary pretzel" into a free glass of champagne. I try to play down the generous legroom and free fruit as I visit the hobos down in economy a few hours later. I think my friend was pleased to see the banana I brought him, but in retrospect, perhaps asking him to dance for it like a monkey was a step too far. I bought a toy before the Vegas trip, a small video recorder, no bigger than a mobile phone, and it grabs an hour of high-quality footage. So I use this now to play my chum footage I'd taken upstairs in the upgrade area, pointing out the spacious aisles, the orgy of free booze about the place, and the entirely more attractive class of traveller that made up the higher echelons of travel I like to frequent. During this playback, the slob next to my friend farted freely into the very air that he would be sucking down his fat gullet in a recycled fashion for the next 8 hours. So I excused myself and headed back upstairs, where I believed a small group of more fragrant passengers were putting on some impromptu Shakespeare. My friend waved goodbye with a clenched fist and some spitting. Settled back into the comfort of my small couch, I opted to watch I Am Legend. If you've not seen it, he dies at the end. Now that is 2 hours of your life I've just saved you. I also watched National Treasure 2 with Nicolas Cage. I don't mean I watched it with him. He wasn't there. He was just in the film. He didn't die, in case you were wondering. But that bald bloke out of the abyss did die. Again, I'd just give the film a miss if I were you. But with a couple of hours eaten up by crap films, I put on some protective footwear and ventured back to the post-apocalyptic wastelands of economy, primarily to check that no feral dogs had eaten my friend yet. He was still with us. I asked him what he had for dinner. Some chicken shit, was his reply. And I decided it probably best not to mention the banquet my stunning hostess had presented me with earlier, although I couldn't resist showing him a video I took of my gorgeous metal cutlery. He tried to hide his plastic spork under a napkin, but it was too late. I'd already seen it. The poor bastard. It was a tearful goodbye as I disembarked. I'd like to think the fact I'd been upgraded on the way out could mean I'd get upgraded again on the way back, but I think both the stewardess and I knew that our time together was over. She didn't look quite as gutted about this fact as I, but I'm pretty sure she was just putting on a brave face. If only I could see under all that makeup, I'd know for sure. But once on the ground in Vegas, and back in the land of unexceptional average people, so I slipped back into the moribund disguise of my hollow life with some ease. To look at me, you wouldn't know I travel as a sophisticate, but I don't mind. I do like to spend time with normals, as I think it builds character. I had a pretty tight schedule, with lots to do, so it was almost immediately off to the eye clinic for me, as I had a batch of tests to sort out before my scheduled operation the next morning. And everything there was fine, right up until they brought me this wad of disclaimers to sign. Now, I'd never sign up for a treatment involving burning fire light being fired into my brain on a whim. So before the procedure, I'd taken, you know, various statistics to support how safe it was. I'd talked to various people who'd had their own surgery and grilled my own surgeon on email. But nothing could prepare me for the list I had now. It started with things like, I understand that I might end up blind. Please sign here. Now, my nurse, she came in. She was a classic Las Vegas woman in her 50s, way too much makeup, and a sun-baked face that wouldn't have looked out of place at the World of Leather on the A13. Her name was Eleanor, and I said, Eleanor, is this form designed to make me shit myself? And she smiled back and said, I wouldn't worry about it, honey. I had my eyes done a while back, and it was fine. And she handed me the pen and left the room. And it was only once she'd gone I realised she'd been wearing glasses. It was, however, too late. My mind was made up. The next day I went back, had a man cut off the tops of my eyes, fire lasers into them, and then put the tops of my eyes back on. It was like being abducted by aliens. Only aliens with an eye fetish, rather than a propensity to stick things up your ass while mutilating cattle, which, on reflection, is probably a good thing. Later that day, I stood at the top of the Rio's Voodoo Lounge, looking in wondering awe as the Las Vegas sun went down over the mountains and the lights came on along the strip. I'd like to pretend my tears were tears of joy brought on by seeing properly with my own eyes for the first time, but actually it's just that they really fucking hurt. It would be wrong of me not to thank Ladbrokes for inviting me to that particular party, as it was a hell of a way to test out my new peepers. The invite did come at a cost, though, as I had to bear witness to a bunch of teenage cheerleaders attempting to get us all to chant, "We love Ladbrokes, we love Ladbrokes." It was a bit like being at a Nazi rally, I imagine. Needless to say, the predominantly British crowd stood with their arms folded and their lips clamped shut. It was painful, but not as painful as my eyes, so I just shut them and waited for the cheerleaders to go away, which is not a sentence I ever thought I'd find myself saying. I made good use of my new bionic eyes during the next few days. I watched some amazing poker at the World Series, including the lovely Kara Scott, who did fantastically well. Congratulations to her and her $41,000. I bumped, in some cases quite literally, into some of the best players on the planet. And I also discovered the delights of beer pong, which perhaps we can talk about another time. However, this is probably far more than Ramchip ever thought I'd talk, and you've probably all fast-forwarded this to the next thing. And I'm probably due for more eye drops anyway, so I'll leave you now. In case you're wondering, I didn't get upgraded on the way back, but I did steal a spork, and I could see through their underwear with my new magic eyes, so I had the last laugh. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll catch you next time on the Eat My Stack podcast. Well, that was Matt Broughton, as is this. How very strange. Anyway, let's get back to Dusk Till Dawn and part two of our exclusive interview with Lucy Rokash.
Got the button. I was a bit blind. So, looked at me, and I was looking at him, and he knew that he'd better not raise because I was not going to let him get away with it like he had been walking over the others. He put his chips down and passed. And I knew he was going to do, and he knew I knew, and therefore it's all over, isn't it?
One equals out the other.
One point is, he didn't have to have anything to raise from that. And I don't have to have anything to re-raise either. And he knows that, and now he's going to commit a load of chips that he doesn't want to with a foxy little hand. So that's life experience. And he looked into my eyes and he knew, don't do it. That was a smart move on his part.
You are naturally aggressive, I think, so you don't suffer fools gladly on the table, do you?
I don't suffer fools at all. I don't suffer. Listen, I'm quite laid back sort of person, really. I'm not I never fight with anybody, But
I've never seen you get upset either.
Well,
I've never even seen you get your pet lip up.
No, I don't.
You do take your audience
right. Listen, it's a game, right? It's a game that involves money. And if I've put my, if I've played like a plonker, I deserve what I've got. And if I've played well and got unlucky, well, at the end of the year, I know I'm going to win. Right?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And I wouldn't let any of these guys have the pleasure of thinking they'd upset me.
Yeah, it's great.
I might upset a few of them, but if they show it to all of them, I don't go out to upset anybody, I certainly wouldn't be rude or abusive to anybody at the table.
There is, do you find that there is a bit of that creeping in? I've found a bit of that creeping in, maybe, is where, I don't know, people are a bit antisocial, I think. The gentlemanliness has gone out of it sometimes. I was talking to James Browning the other day, and he was sort of, he says he doesn't like some of the attitude problem that a lot of people think you get. I don't know if you're finding any of that. But it's different because, blokes aren't going to do that with women. I don't care. Well, I couldn't do it anyway.
Not unless they want to get smacked or not.
Yeah. You don't want to get slapped about where your granny, do you?
I'll tell you, I have slapped somebody once.
Really?
For being very abusive.
I don't blame
you. And I'm not going to tell you about it because...
They're not going to have white matters, so I haven't given you grief in a favour or Tony G.
Listen, no, people, strangely enough, Tony G, and I've played against him, and I've played against Manchester, don't give me any lip whatsoever because I don't respond to it.
No.
They can talk like this all day, all night, and I'm just not going to,
just turn your death aid off.
Well, yeah, exactly. Just not going to respond to it.
Yeah.
And somehow it's sort of mano a mano thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't sort of quite have the same.
Yeah, I don't know about it with the women, but with the men, it's like we have a big dick contest.
Yes.
And it gets silly. And that does seem to go on.
But strangely enough, the first time I played in a ladies' tournament in the World Series, I was hot and fat. Get me out of here quick!
Really?
I played in it, and the girl, and there were young women, and they're coming on like men,
aggressive.
Yeah, and I'm the best, and I've done this, and I've done that, and then somebody else had piped up the same, they were nearly all Americans, and I'm thinking, oh, please, get me out of here, it's painful.
I haven't seen that so much with the European ladies, yeah.
That was in Vegas. I went to play in a ladies' tournament in Tunica, Mississippi, and they were perfect ladies.
Yeah.
And I've never come across it in Europe either.
But that's Vegas.
I think it's a Vegas thing. Yeah. I think,
I suppose a lot of them are Adidas and Kubias and that have got into the game. And
listen, if you've got to sit or stand in front of the table and tell everybody how damn good you are.
Yeah.
You're not that good, are you? They should know and they should be scared of you. And most of the time they are when you don't say anything or do anything. It's an aura that you've got. It's presence. It's presence at the table.
Great. Anyway, thanks very much, Lucy.
Pleasure.
Pleasure to talk to you as always.
You make sure that young kid's sitting on my table tomorrow night.
Oh, I know that.
At PokerFreeRollWorld.com, all our games are free. That's right, 100% free. No need to deposit, so you can play risk-free. Only free poker at PokerFreeRollWorld.com. Sign up today at PokerFreeRollWorld.com. It's free. You're listening to the Eat My Stack Poker Podcast, brought to you by the eatmystack.co.uk Poker Forum.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview. Ramchip asked me to wrap the show up and to give my thoughts on Lucy Rokash, so I thought what better way to do that than through the medium of song.
You used to be special, and often even shock people, when you said you made your cash from cards and were a professional gambler. But now it's not the same. You think online poker is quite lame, 'cause all the kiddies from the internet keep breezing you all in with Instabet. Lucy, poker is a game that keeps evolving. Even if your ovaries are golden, you should pop to Tesco's and buy a mouse instead of sitting around grumbling in your house. Fire up Blue Square, it's a monster. A shameless plug, I know, but we need the sponsor. Female card players are getting fitter, but Lucy Rokash, no, she ain't bitter. Bitter, bitter, hey, hey, hey. Lucy Rokash ain't bitter, 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 hey, hey, hey. When you drove from Stoke-on-Trent, late night poker was heaven sent. A Monday morning teaching history, a Friday playing poker on TV. Barry Greenstein said you were the best, but even that old git has internet. Multi-tabling can be profitable, so why the f*** are you so miserable? Lucy, poker is a game that keeps evolving. Even if your ovaries are golden, you should pop to Argos and buy a mouse instead of sitting around grumbling in your house. Fire up Blue Square, it's a monster. A shameless plug, I know, but we need the sponsor. Female card players are getting fitter, but luckily Lucy Rokash ain't bitter. Bitter, bitter, hey, hey, hey. Lucy Rokash ain't bitter, 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 hey, 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 hey.
Well, that's about it for this episode of the Eat My Stack podcast. Next time round, we'll be catching up with Tommy Angelo, talking about his new book, talking to Bass about his recent results and the build-up to playing in the London EPT, and catching up with Simon Aces Trumper, talking about the Dust Till Dawn anniversary events, playing in the World Series of Poker Europe, and playing as a stakes player on Staker Shark. So until then, this is Matt Broughton, thanking you for listening, and hoping that you'll join us on the next episode of the Eat My Stack podcast.